I had a really amazing transition planned, but I want to double tap on what Lauren and Johnny just shared, because I want to remind you, or maybe you haven't heard, your giving in response to our Christmas offering challenge is a percentage of participation significantly beat every other Brentwood campus. Not that we're keeping score, or that I looked at that number twice a day while we were collecting that offering, which I'm kind of ashamed to admit that I did, but that is a shout out to you. And I also want to take it just a minute to acknowledge Johnny and Lauren. You don't see Lauren especially up here very often. These two people are serving you, serving your children. I just think they're amazing. Okay, now I'm going to do the cool transition. Is that all right? You might be surprised to know or to learn that when I was in high school, I was not a star athlete. I know that's very difficult to believe, but I did not play on the football team. I did not play baseball, basketball. I did not run track. I did not play soccer. I did not play tennis. I know it's astounding. What I did play was the trumpet. You can laugh. It's totally fine. And I played the trumpet in the high school band. And here's something fun about our high school band. Every year we would do a Christmas concert. And I want to tell you a story. It's a true story that happened in the Christmas concert in my sophomore year of high school, because that was the year that the band conductor decided, for whatever reason, that we were going to play the Hallelujah Chorus from Handel's Messiah. Now, some of you may know this, some of you may not know it, but just to make sure we're talking about the same piece of music, I've asked Hunter to cue it up, and we're going to get a couple of bars. Do we know this piece of music? Have you heard this before? Huh. All right, there we go. That's good. Now, if you've ever been somewhere where that piece is performed, when it starts to play at the end of a much longer concert, what is it that you are supposed to do? Stand up. Okay. And in case you didn't know that, I'm teaching you that right now, and we're actually going to practice. Now, you only need to stand up if it's easy for you to stand up, but if you are ever in an auditorium or a Christmas concert, or heaven help you, a high school band performance, and they play this piece of music, you're going to stand up. So Hunter, hit it. Okay, we're going to stand up. Okay. Fantastic. You can sit down. What just happened there is what should have happened in our high school Christmas concert. I want to paint this scene for you a little bit. I did not go to the kind of high school that had a performing arts center. What we had was a gym. So the high school band, in all our glory, we were on the stage of the gym, and we'd rolled out a mat on the floor, and chairs are set up for the parents and anybody else who couldn't get out to come into this particular performance. And my father, who'd driven me there, and my sister, she was also in the band, he's sitting in about the second or the third row, right in the middle. So right about there. But there aren't three rows. There's really just one, so everybody can see to the front. And we started to play the music. It did not sound nearly that good. We were what we lacked in skill, we made up for in enthusiasm and volume. But it was clearly recognizable as the Hallelujah Chorus. And my father, in deference and reverence for both the music and its subject, immediately stood up. And no one else did. Everybody in the auditorium was looking at him from the back, and everybody on the stage was looking at him from the front. And my father had a choice. He had a choice to sit back down, because nobody else was standing, or perhaps he could have turned around and encouraged people to stand, and they probably would have, or what I might have done would be stand up, realize immediately that nobody else was standing, and pretend that I'd gotten up because I had to leave emergently to either use the restroom or take a telephone call. What my father actually did, though, was give me a picture of integrity and bravery that I have remembered my entire life. He stood for the entire performance, and when it was over, he sat back down. I've never been more proud of my father. I mean, I'm on stage. I'm looking like, that's my dad. Your loser parents, they're seated. My dad not only knows to stand up, he's willing to stand up when nobody else would stand up. I mean, it was great. What a cool thing to see when you're 15 years old. I remember it all these years later. My father in that moment showed bravery. He showed guts, showed integrity. He showed that he wasn't afraid of what people thought. And I bet that all of us have had opportunities where we're in a situation where we're not exactly sure what the right thing to do is, but courage seems to be required. Maybe you've never gotten the opportunity to stand by yourself in some awful high school concert, but you've been around when your white friends are telling racist black jokes, and you're not sure, hey, am I supposed to laugh? Am I supposed to be silent? Should I say something? What's the right thing to do? And what will happen to me if I do the right thing? Or maybe you've never had that experience. Maybe you've just been around and people are gossiping. And they're talking about some other mutual acquaintance in a way that you know is not only not honoring to that person, but it's not honoring to God. And you're listening and you're thinking, I could intercede here, but is it the right thing to do? I'm not sure if I'm brave enough. I'm a little afraid of what'll happen. And if you haven't been in one of those situations, I know that you've seen it. Because if you read the news, if you watch television, what you've seen is you've seen victims of crimes of abuse. And they come back days, weeks, months, sometimes years later, and they talk about their abuse. They talk about their story in public. Why? For retribution? Not for retribution, but for judgment. And every time the victim of abuse comes forward, what do we say about that person? We say, that person, that required some real courage. Because maybe she wouldn't be believed, or maybe he would be ridiculed, or maybe it would cost him relationally or financially. Like it takes courage. It takes courage to do that kind of thing, doesn't it? I bet at some point you've seen a movie where bravery was celebrated. I mean, we love bravery so much in our culture, we turn it into movies. Have you seen the movie Braveheart? It's kind of in the title. It's a movie about a guy who's what? Who's brave. Have you seen Saving Private Ryan? Have you seen Liam Neeson in Taken, who's brave on behalf of his daughter? We celebrate bravery. We celebrate when people are courageous instead of quiet. We celebrate when they're strong instead of silent. We celebrate when people master and get past their fear. And I'm going to give you a warning and a little bit of preparation, because in just a minute, I'm going to ask you to write down one of your fears. Now, I noticed that this week, for some reason, almost all of you are sitting in a different place. That's so good. You are applying our lesson from last week. So good on you. But what I want you to know is that in the middle pews on each end, there's some white index cards. They look like this. You can't miss them. They're like this. And I need everybody to have one of these index cards, because in just a few minutes, I'm going to ask you to use one. So if you're in the middle, everybody's kind of moved from the middle to the sides. You might have to pass some cards out over to the side. Make sure that everybody has something to write on and something to write with, because I'm going to ask you to write down one of your fears. And one of your fears might be that if you write down your fear, I'm going to call on you and have you tell us what it is. Just to let you know, I'm not going to call on you and have you tell me what your fear is. I'm going to write it. You're going to write it down. And this is going to be just for your use, for our application in today's message. But to kind of get the engine, the wheels turning a little bit, I'm going to give you, I wrote down a list of things that we might reasonably be afraid of. You ready for my list? Here are some things that we might be afraid of. We might be afraid of physical safety. If you've ever been in the army, or if you've ever driven on Interstate 65, you might have a reason to fear for your physical safety. You're worried that something's going to happen to your body. You might have an emotional fear. You might fear that if you do something, you'll lose a friend. You're going to be damaged in some way emotionally. Some of us fear for our job or for money. Like we have financial fears. How many of us have, don't raise your hand. Many of us have financial fears because we lived our entire life, it seems, without enough margin, without enough. We have financial fears. Some of us just have a fear of the unknown. Or maybe in the past you did something that was wrong and you got away with it, and you know the right thing to do is to fess up. But you're worried You're worried what will happen if you do that. You have a fear of confession, of other people knowing your mistakes. Maybe you just have a fear of making mistakes. Or maybe you're like pretty much everybody. You have a fear of dying. I wrote down this phrase that didn't exist in our lexicon until just a few years ago. FOMO, that's the fear of missing out, right? We're worried that somewhere somebody else in the world is having a better time than we are. And we live with this idea that maybe I'm not doing enough. Maybe I'm having fun, but I'm not doing it the right way. FOMO. And then if you're not afraid of any of those things, spiders. Maybe you're afraid of spiders because spiders. All right. So what I want you to do right now, I want you to write down your fear. If you haven't done already now, I want you to write it in the middle. And just to make this easy and fair, I'm going to tell you the fear that I wrote down as I was preparing to preach to you today. I wrote down that I have a fear of insignificance. I have a fear that somehow I won't do enough of what God has for me to do, that I'll get to the end of my life and I'll look back and I'll say, there was that other thing I could have done, I should have done, and I didn't do. And that's what I wrote down on my card. But don't worry, I'm not going to call on you to have you tell me what you wrote down. But last week, if you were here, we asked this question, what do we do when we don't know what to do? And today, we're going to ask the question and try to answer it. What do we do when we're afraid? Maybe a different way to ask that question is, how is it that I can be brave? How can I be brave? And you've been reading along with us in the Bible chronologically, and we made it through Leviticus, glory. We're in Numbers, and we're almost through Numbers. And last week, we were in number 6. And you might remember in number 6, we had this great account that the nation of Israel has left Egypt. They've been outside of Egypt for a little bit over a year, and God is leading them. You remember that there's this pillar of cloud, this supernatural cloud, and a pillar of fire that's there by night. And when the cloud would lift up and move, the people would what? We said it last week. They would set out. That was this section over here. And then when the cloud stopped, they would camp. That was this section over here. They did all this at the Lord's command, and they're following God's leading around the wilderness. They're doing exactly what God tells them to do. And we said, well, it may not have been easy to follow God's leading. It was kind of simple. And maybe that God was having them do simple things in preparation for bigger and more complex and frightening things. And that's where we're going to pick it up today in Numbers chapter 13, verse 1. Now, I had you stand for the Hallelujah chorus. I am not going to have you stand for this. And here's the reason. I'm going to read a lot of it, and I'm going to read it slow, and I'm going to put in a lot of comments. And if you stand the whole time, you're likely to fall over or not come back next week. So we're going to read Numbers starting in chapter 13, verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses. So you know it's going to be good. The Lord spoke to Moses, send men to scout out the land of Canaan that I am giving to the Israelites. And I'm going to pause already. Because what God is reminding Moses and the Israelites is, hey, I have promised a land to you, and you're about to get it. Remember, 400 years before, God had promised to their ancestor Abraham, I'm going to turn you into a great nation, and I'm going to give you this land. And up until now, that promise has not seemed a reality, but God, minute one, I'm going to give you this land, send out some scouts. And then he gives some instructions. I want you to send 12 men. You're going to send one man, a leader from each of 12 tribes. And Moses sent them from the wilderness at the Lord's command, and it says all the men were leaders in Israel. Now, there's a whole bunch of verses in Numbers chapter 13 that you might have read this week in your plan. I'm not going to read them. And the reason is I don't want to try to pronounce all those names in front of you. And also, it's really long. So I'm going to give you a quick summary of what happens. These 12 men leave. They leave on foot. And they go a distance, as best as we can read the text, of between 350 and 500 miles. That's a lot. And they do it, according to the text, in 40 days, which is a number used in the Old Testament to mean sometime more than a month, might be a little bit less than 40, might be a little bit more than 40. But the point is 350 to 500 miles in just about a month and a half. That is a long way. And part of their instruction is to see if the land is good. So these men, it's great. They get some figs, they get pomegranates, and because pomegranates, I'm not sure. Then they get this big bunch of grapes, and the bunch of grapes is so big that it takes two men to carry it. They tie the grapes to a pole and carry it on. Two men carry this pole on their shoulders back to the camp. Here's a fun little fact that I verified yesterday. If today you go home and you Google the Ministry of Tourism for Israel, you will see that the logo of the Israel Tourism Ministry is two men carrying a bunch of grapes on a pole. Kind of interesting. God has told the Israelites all these years ago that the land is good, and what the Ministry of Tourism wants you to know, if you come here, we have grapes. I mean, so come on. So we're going to skip ahead a little bit, and it says at the end of 40 days-ish, they returned from scouting out the land. So far, so good. God's promised them this land, told them to scout it out. They come back. Now, the men went back to Moses and Aaron, and this is key, in the entire Israelite community, everybody. What happens next is going to happen in public. They brought back a report for them and the whole community. Again, we're in a big group. They showed them the fruit of the land. Check out these grapes. They reported to Moses, "We went into the land where you sent us, and indeed, it is flowing with milk and honey, and here is just some of its fruit." And now we have what I think is the key verse in the entire chapter, and the word is, however. However. Actually, in the New International Version, the word is, but. The land is good, but, however, the people living in the land are strong, and the cities are large and fortified. And apparently, this is not what the Israelites wanted to hear, because it's very clear from what's about to happen that they've started to murmur, they've started to argue among themselves, and it's very clear that they are afraid. And what becomes apparent to us in the text as we read in chapter in Numbers 13 and in Numbers 14 is that 10 men have given a bad report, but there's two. We're going to meet one in just a second. It's a different idea about what happened, and that man is Caleb. And Caleb hears these 10 men giving a report that's causing tremendous strife in the Israelite camp. They're worried, they're fearful, and Caleb has a choice. My father had a choice to sit down or pretend that he'd made a mistake. Caleb has a choice, and his choice is to endorse the report that he's just heard. He can say, yeah, actually, the land is good and the people are big. And by the way, he could say that and it would be totally true, because the land was good and the people were big. That is true. Fear may not have been the right response, but Caleb could just as easily have given his assent to make it easier on himself. He could have done something else. And maybe this is what we do sometimes when we're afraid. He could have just said nothing at all. I mean, he didn't give the bad report. It wasn't necessarily his job. And after all, it was 10 to 2. So maybe I'm just wrong. He could have just kept his mouth shut and no one would have judged him any less or thought that he was weak or not brave. But that's not what Caleb does. Caleb takes option number 3. And it says, Caleb quieted the people. And I want to just stop there. Quieted the people. The people is about like 2 million people. All right, and 2 million is not hyperbole. We have several hundred thousand fighting men in addition to their wives and children. This is a big group of people that's grumbling against the direction God and Moses are about to try to lead them. And Caleb, on his own, in verse 30, stands up and quiets the people in the presence of Moses and says, "Let's go up now and take possession of the land, because we can certainly conquer it." 2 million to 2. But the men who'd gone up with him responded, "We can't attack the people because they're stronger than we are." Now, I don't know how many of you served in the military. I did not. But here's something that I know, is this verse is totally false. It's not true that you can't attack somebody just because he is bigger than you. Have you guys ever seen a big dog and a small dog together? Which dog is it that attacks? Is it ever the big dog? It's the small dog. He's got like some little attitude problem. He may not win the fight, but he will absolutely attack. You can attack anyone of any size. What they said was, "We can't attack the people because they're stronger." What they meant was, We don't want to attack the people because we are afraid. Caleb, we understand what you're saying, that we can take possession of the land, but the men are strong and we're afraid. So they gave a negative report to the Israelites about the land that they had scouted. And what they said was, all the people we saw in it are men of great size. They're the football players. We're the band. To ourselves, we seemed like grasshoppers, and we must have seemed the same to them. So just to recap, God has promised them a land that it's been on his list of promises to fulfill for 400 years. He's about to fulfill it. They send scouts into the land at the direction of God. They give a good report about the land, but they give a bad report about the people, and everyone is terrified except Caleb, and later we learn his fellow spy, Joshua, who ends up becoming Moses' successor. People grumble, they're afraid, and they're scared. And the words on which this entire passage turns are these, but and however. Now, can we just acknowledge, as far as I'm concerned, these people had pretty good reason to be afraid, right? I mean, do you necessarily want to go attack a nation where the people are 1 or 2 feet taller than you are? That is not on my list of top 10 things to do. It's just not. And I think also Israel at this time, they've just come out of Egypt. They've been out less than a year. It's not like this is an experienced army. These are not people that have seen a lot of combat. And I don't know what warfare methods were like, but I've got to imagine if I had the choice of staying in a camp with manna coming down from heaven every day and God miraculously feeding us, or going into a land to fight a bunch of giants, I might rather stay in the camp. There's a good reason to be afraid. And if you're listening to this and you think, well, I would have been Joshua, I would have been Caleb, I would have been the guy saying, God can surely do it, I'm going to let you know, I'm not so sure. And the reason I'm not so sure is because it was literally 1 million to 1. 2 million Israelites, 2 actual leaders. No one with a backbone except 2 guys. So if you'd been there, we want to think that we would be the one saying, come on, let's go. I know we can do it. The reality is, the statistical reality is that it's 1 million to 1 that you would have been so afraid you would not have wanted to move from your camp. So the question is, if it's 1 million to 1, how can we be brave? And I think the clue is in the language. You know that I'm very big on listening to language and trying to understand and seeing how the words give us power. When the men say that we can't attack the enemy, we know right away that that's false. That is simply a false belief. We can, we just don't want to. I don't think that's the most significant word in the passage. The most significant word in the passage is however or but. And the reason is because everything that you said before you get to the word however or but, you are invalidating. And we talked about this in the small group that I was in this morning. If you guys are not in small groups here, we have some high quality small groups going on. It's an unsolicited advertisement. 9:30, need to be here. We have some great teaching, and I was in this morning in Dustin's small group, and we had a couple, and she looked at her husband, and she said, I love you, honey, but. Okay, whatever follows that, we're not sure that she loves him, right? So whatever happens before we say however or before we say the word but, it becomes untrue, and we see that right here. The land is good, however, the land is good, but. What do we do when we're afraid? How is that we be brave? We need to watch our howevers. Just watch the however. What happens after we say the word however or the word but? That is our fear. And what were these spies quite reasonably afraid of? They were afraid of the size of the people in the land and their fortifications. And once you know this trick, you can listen for it anywhere. And I'm going to tell you, anybody know what you were doing 4 years ago this weekend? Anyone? Right about now, 4 years ago. I'll tell you what you were doing. You had heard these two words together for the first time, COVID and 19. Just about 4 years ago, right now, 2020, March, we were starting to hear that phrase and wondering how it was going to impact our lives. And it certainly did impact our lives. And I've told you that that time I was working for Dave Ramsey, I was selling Financial Peace University. I think that like everybody would benefit from taking Financial Peace University. I'm a pretty good salesman. And so it was my job during COVID-19 to actually call churches around the United States and convince them that they should do Financial Peace University. Not just a little bit, but I needed them to do a lot because I was going to, the more of it I sold, the more money I was going to make and the more people they would help. You get the idea. So I would call these churches and then this is the conversation I would have time after time after time. We love Financial Peace University. We know that it's helped our people. It's helped me personally. This is what the person on the other end would say. We've done this in our church and it's been great. And then what word would I hear? But, and then this phrase, which ended up driving me absolutely just short of bananas. We don't know what's going to happen. Now, is that decision a rational decision or is that a fear-based decision? That's a decision based on something that's unknown. I heard this so many times from churches all around the United States that I could actually mouth it along with them. I would be on the phone and they'd say, we would love to do this. And then I would go, oh, we don't know what's going to happen. And they would tell me the thing, right? Here's a reality about that situation. They didn't know what was going to happen in February of 2020 either. They just thought that they knew. If you want to learn to be brave, watch your however. Actually, I'm not going to say the other. Watch your however. Watch your however. And you'll hear it in other people, and we'll hear it with us too. And here's the trick. If you want to learn to be brave, change the order of the words. We said that whatever happens before the however, that's the part that gets canceled out. God says, I'm giving you a good land. And the scouts come back and they say, yeah, there's a good land, but it's full of giants. What if they'd said it the other way? We just went 350 to 500 miles through this land and it's full of giants. But God has promised to give it to us and it's a good land. Maybe you have a fear of being lonely. Maybe that's your fear. Maybe that's what you wrote down on your card. You know, I do this, I do that, I would invest in this relationship, but I'm afraid of being lonely. I'm afraid of being lonely, but I'm going to invest in relationships anyway. Maybe you're at work and there's something going on there that's not quite right. And your fear is, if I say something, I'm going to lose my job. And if I lose my job, the money doesn't come in, and my rent's not going to be paid, and I'm not going to be able to feed my kids. I'm going to tell you what, I'm not sure that that fear is unreasonable at all. But if you phrase it this way, I may lose my job, but what's going on there isn't right. All of a sudden, you have named, not only have you named your fear, you've put it in second place to your faith. Do you see how it works? My best friend is drinking too much. My best friend is in a relationship that he shouldn't be in. My best friend has an addiction that I need to confront, but I'm worried if I do that, we won't be friends anymore. I'm worried we won't be friends anymore, but my best friend has a problem and we need to talk about it. I want this church to be a courageous community. I want us to have no fears, and especially no fears that are unnamed. God has given us so many promises, and yet we tell lies to ourselves. Do you know what the most interesting thing about this entire account to me is? So the spies come back, 12 men, 10 with a good report, 2 with a bad report. Where does the conversation happen? The conversation happens in public, underneath a supernatural pillar of cloud and fire. 10 men have made a choice to look at giants in the land rather than God in the cloud. What are they doing? They are feeding their fear and not their faith. So easy to feed a fear, so difficult to feed our faith. 10 men with a report that made sense but wasn't complete ignored the supernatural cloud, the parting of the Red Sea, the plagues in Egypt, the daily provision of manna, and said, we know that God can do all these things, but you want to be brave? Watch that word. Watch your however. When we say that God can't do something, we're simply wrong. And when we fear may be real, but we have the choice to set it aside. We always have the opportunity to operate in godly faith instead of worldly fear. So here's what I want us to do with our cards. I already did mine. You can pull yours out. The reason I asked you to write your fear in the middle is because I want you to put a sentence around it. And here's the condition for the sentence. Now, I'm not going to help you with the sentence, and this is not for a grade. This is just for you. After your fear, I want you to write the word but or the word however. And then what I want you to write what the other thing is that's true about your fear. And I've given you about a half a dozen different examples. When I tell you what I wrote down on mine, I told you that the fear that I wrote down, this is not my only fear. I also hate spiders. But I wrote down insignificance. I have a fear of insignificance, but I wrote down Ephesians 2:10. You know what Ephesians 2:10 says? Ephesians 2:10 says that God has prepared good works in advance for me to do before the foundation of the world, and that you and I are God's workmanship. He's given us something to do. And while I may fear I fear insignificance, but however, I know that God has given me a deeper scriptural promise. Be brave. You all have read Numbers. Most of you have been in church all your lives, and you know what happens. You know that the Israelites believe the 10 spies. You know that within 24 hours, those 10 spies would be dead because of their cowardice. And the people who didn't die would wander around in the desert for 40 years, living on manna, wondering what would have been different if I had had courage in that one moment to do the right thing. Don't be those people. Don't be those people. When I was a sophomore in high school, my father gave me a picture of what it looks like to stand up and be courageous when it's not even required. Our prayer point for this week for our church at Woodbine, we want to engage our community. We are praying for the lost in this region, in this neighborhood. We're praying for them to develop a relationship with God and that we might be the instruments of that salvation. Do you know what outreach requires? It requires courage. Requires bravery. Watch your however. Set it aside. Let's build a courageous church.